You may recall just recently on RN Afternoons, we discussed the latest findings on how opioid drugs weren't all they were cracked up to be in the treatment of lower back pain. And we asked you what alternatives work for you. And boy, did you come to the party with a range of exercises and philosophies. You really came out on that one. But a substance that came to the fore, which really took us by surprise, was turmeric. Yes, that yellow spice found particularly in Indian cuisine. Joel told us on Facebook, and I quote, "I'm an organic turmeric farmer in northern New South Wales. I've been sending fresh turmeric to my mum, who suffers osteoarthritis and muscle pain. She had effectively eliminated her need for medicated pain relief by including 200 grams of fresh turmeric into her diet per week." And medical science is starting to bear out some of the anecdotal observations like Joel's and yours, maybe. Last year, a study at Australia's Swinburne University into the effects of turmeric on brain function yielded some interesting results, which were published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology. Professor Andrew Sholey is the director of Swinburne Centre for Human Psychopharmacology, and he's been researching the effects of herbs, spices and extracts on the human brain for the last two decades. And Andrew's with me on Skype. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Michael.
Good to have you with us. What are some of the proven benefits in the medical research world that we already know about when it comes to turmeric?
Well, most of the research is on a component of turmeric called curcumin. And there do seem to be some benefits, particularly in terms of inflammatory processes. It has antioxidant properties. And in my own lab, we've looked at effects on brain function and mental function.
So curcumin is this compound that's obviously of great interest. When it came to some of the studies undertaken in your faculty, tell us what happened and how it was conducted.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth saying, first of all, that the actually native turmeric, as we call it, is very poorly absorbed. So we used a special extract of curcumin, which was treated in a way to make it more, as we call it, bioavailable.
So while we're talking about that, Sandra, I think we should raise this with people so they understand. Your research in this area was underwritten by a company that is actually distributing on a commercial basis this very product you've just alluded to, yeah?
Absolutely, and I think that's very important for full disclosure and transparency to make it clear that this study that I'm talking about, and in fact a future study, was sponsored by the manufacturers of this particular extract. They sponsor a lot of research, and they actually just gave us a grant. They weren't involved in the design or the interpretation.
Nevertheless, I have to ask you, as a broadcaster and journalist, do you feel like the results you're about to unveil to us were in any way skewed by that source of funding?
No, of course not. I mean, my lab gets funding from government sources and from industry, and we use the same rigor for all our research. But I think it's just very important to be transparent about the sources of funding.
And we should point out at the end of this conversation, we'll give some people alternatives away from any commercial products so that you have an understanding of what choices are available. But Andrew, tell us about the study and what you did.
Yeah, so this is really based on some background research showing that, bizarrely, that people who eat more curry have less incidence of cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease. And again, just to make that clear, we're not talking about a binary effect. Eat curry, you don't get Alzheimer's disease. But there's a trend at the population level which seems to show this. And that's controlling for many of the variables which may also predispose somebody to get dementia or cognitive decline.
And this finding, Andrew, I take it, was picked up in India in regions where turmeric is playing a almost daily part in cuisine and diet?
Yeah, it was actually that particular study was conducted in Singapore.
Ah, right.
And similar effects have been found. And when people have tried to look into this, they've pinpointed this component of turmeric called curcumin. And following that, there was a series of studies in rodents which showed that administration of curcumin at realistic dietary levels seemed to protect these animals' brains against some of the ravages of cognitive aging, if you like.
Do we know how and why that occurs with this compound?
Well, with curcumin, as with many botanical extracts, it has what we call pleiotropic properties. In other words, it has multiple effects on processes which contribute to cognitive decline. So rather than the kind of standard magic bullet drug effect where you're just affecting a single neurotransmitter, some plant extracts seem to have evolved with a kind of complement of properties, which means that they can nudge various processes in the right direction. And so those effects in the brain include anti-inflammatory effects. We know that a lot of cognitive decline may be associated with low-level chronic inflammation, including in the brain.
Right.
Antioxidant effects. The brain is very, very greedy, metabolically active, so it makes it particularly susceptible to oxidative damage, just because of the way that oxidative damage occurs in metabolically active tissue, and a whole host of other effects, which including effects on the chemical transmitters in the brain, the neurotransmitters.
So in effect, I mean, the studies that you've also seen overseas, borne out locally by what's happened at Swinburne, indicate that you can certainly do no harm to yourself by ingesting in some form, the most bioavailable form you can, turmeric on a regular basis.
Well, I would always urge a little bit of caution. And if people are thinking about self-medicating in any way, then at least talk to your GP about it.
Well, Andrew, here's the thing. And I am not, by the way, if you're listening, I am not a GP basher in any way, shape or form. I have some very good friends who are GPs who've also served me very well when I'm a patient. But can I say that not every GP is going to be that open or even have that experience or that knowledge to go, you want to use turmeric? I mean, not everyone has that basis of knowledge to consult with.
That's, I think, part of a broader problem to do with the lack of education about nutrition and nutritional interventions, which is a global effect. In fact, in Australia, it's probably better than in North America, for example.
Which is why people go to naturopaths, which, I mean, again, you can have varied experiences depending on the skills base of the naturopath. So I guess, I mean, I just wanted to raise that as a point that some of these, you know, cause and effect, oh, we'll just go and seek advice. It's sometimes hard to find the right advice.
I think it's very, very hard to strike a balance between people who are open and are able to read the results of well-controlled clinical trials such as ours and interpret them accordingly, as opposed to people who dismiss anything that they see as some sort of alternative medicine. I prefer the word, you know, bioactive nutrients, actually. Then on the other hand, you do get people who go too far the other way and just accept anecdotal evidence as real evidence. And of course, anecdote does not equal evidence.
No, it does not. So these are the paths we have to tread through, I guess. Andrew Scholey is my guest. Professor Andrew Scholey is the director of Swinburne Center for Human Psychopharmacology. And we're talking about some of the latest evidence emerging about the benefits, if bioavailable, of turmeric inside the body when it comes to brain function. Just, Andrew, if you wouldn't mind, just very quickly, running out of time, I want to get to some of the ways we can ingest turmeric. But what happened in the study conducted within Swinburne?
Okay, so very quickly, what we found was that actually even these were healthy older individuals. So the mean age was 68. It was a randomized controlled trial, and what we found that curcumin, the extract we used, improved working memory. So the ability to sort of hold information.
How quickly?
Online, if you like. That was within hours of a single dose.
Wow.
And then acutely, and then chronically, or at least after 28 days, we found that effect on working memory was maintained, but it also had an anti-fatigue effect, and in fact stopped people feeling the stressful effects of just visiting the laboratory and sitting in front of a computer doing computer tests, which is right. Stressful for a 68-year-old often.
Well, that's really interesting. And for those people listening who are now, of course, eager to bring turmeric more regularly into their lives, let's talk very quickly about bioavailability. There are commercial products such as the one underwritten through your research in the company that worked with you. And I take it one of the reasons we're talking about this is bioavailability is where you can extract maximum benefit before the compound exits your system.
That's correct. So if you just eat turmeric, which actually contains a reasonably high level of curcumin, about 4%. Unfortunately, most of it isn't absorbed. So most of it goes straight through you, so to speak. There have been different ways in which people have tried to increase the bioavailability. So that includes co-ingesting curcumin with pepperine, which is extracted from pepper. And that maybe doubles or more the levels in the body. And then other sort of companies and industrial scientists have tried to find ways of increasing the bioavailability in other ways by actually treating the curcumin molecule. And the form we used was what was called lipidated, which just helps it to travel across cells and into the bloodstream and the brain. But, you know, I don't really want to mention the actual extract, but that seems to be one of the, certainly it's the extract that I worked on and we saw very striking results. That doesn't mean that some of the other extracts aren't equally as good. But my feeling is that, you know, people should try and find out the extracts that the research has been done on, because unfortunately, the regulatory landscape for many of these herbal products and botanical products isn't as tight as it could be, as tightly regulated as it could be.
So beware of fraudsters and or cowboys in this area.
I mean, if you can find the extract that the research has been done on, you know, you can be sure that it has some support for efficacy. And also, of course, you're then supporting the companies who are actually funding research rather than the ones that are just sort of riding on the tailcoats of those people.
Well, Andrew, we'll let those people listening make up their minds on that. And I do thank you so much indeed for taking the time today. It's been great.
Thank you.
Professor Andrew Scholey, Director of Swinburne Centre for Human Psychopharmacology.